Unitarian Universalists have a long history of creating statements of faith as we try to describe our ever-shifting movement. And one of those covenant statements, written back in 1894 by a Unitarian named James Villa Blake, went like this. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Well, I like the idea of service as the law of the church. If you think about what usually shows up in church law, you might think of things like the Ten Commandments, all the things that you are forbidden to do. And while most of us would probably agree that we shouldn't kill people or break our promises, much of traditional church law forbids things that most of us think are just fine, thank you, like homosexuality and birth control and ordaining women. At least I think those things are fine. So church law traditionally has been defined as that which allows the people in the church to know what is acceptable and what is unacceptable. And it is, for the most part, restrictive, a list of all the things you may not do. But here is James Villa Blake saying that love is the spirit of this church and service is its law. The one and only law he sees fit to mention is not something you can't do, but something you must do. And the one thing that he considers worthy of being called church law is service to others. Then in 1933, a Universalist named L. Griswold Williams took Villa's covenant and adapted it a bit. And his version went like this. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve the human need, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant with each other and with God. So Williams leaves out the idea of law altogether, saying that love is our doctrine and service is our prayer. Part of what is necessary if souls are to grow into harmony with the divine. Now, I like both versions of this covenant. I like the idea of service as our law and service as our prayer. Both make it abundantly clear that it's at the heart of our faith one way or another. Calling it law emphasizes a sense of obligation, and I sometimes need that when I'm feeling lazy or self-indulgent. But it was the idea of service as prayer that would not let go of me. Because I have been guilty of what Peter Morales talks about in his article, of seeing spirituality and social action, well, he said we see them as opposites. I've never seen them as opposites, but I've seen them as separate from one another. Two different things. Some people really care about service and social action, and some people really care about spirituality. And as he says, they are part and parcel of one another. If the purpose of a spiritual practice is spiritual growth, then service is a powerful spiritual discipline. And he reminds us of the many ways that we're changed, deepened, made more fully human when we serve others. When we think of service as law, we're reminded that we have a duty to serve others for the sake of the people we serve. When we think of service as prayer, we're reminded of how much serving others benefits us. And while it's true that service deepens and humanizes us as individuals, I want to lift up the ways that serving others also deepens and benefits us as communities. For one thing, working together on service projects brings people together and strengthens the bonds among us. You've probably all experienced that at one time or another. There is nothing like a common project to bring people together. We get to know each other in new ways when we work side by side. We get to know people from other groups who join us in the work. We get to know the people we're serving. The act of serving brings all kinds of people together in all kinds of ways. Now, as an example of this, the little Mennonite church where I am a member served a free turkey dinner yesterday in Sellersville, in Perkasie. Sorry, I live in Sellersville, church is in Perkasie. Served a free turkey dinner yesterday in Perkasie, Pennsylvania. Two women in our tiny little congregation decided that this was something they wanted to do for our local community. They solicited donations from the community. They wound up with 16 turkeys and about as many pies, and they roasted all those turkeys. They recruited church members and friends to help. They peeled and mashed 50 pounds of potatoes. They made stuffing and gravy from scratch. The green beans were canned. Flyers went up, bright orange flyers all over town with a picture of a turkey saying, "Free turkey dinner with all the trimmings. Come and eat your fill, Saturday, 1 to 5. They had no idea how many people would show up, whether they would have mountains of leftover turkey or whether they'd run out halfway through. They just went at it with love and faith and hoped for the best. Well, I had not expected to be part of the project because I had a prior commitment out of town that was going to keep me unavailable the entire day. But my schedule changed and I was home by mid-afternoon yesterday. And now I have to go into confession mode. Some of you who know me, have known me over the years, know that I tend to write sermons quite close to the time at which I have to deliver them. So yesterday afternoon, I was so grateful to be home earlier than I had expected. With all this time stretching in front of me in such a leisurely process of putting the pieces together in their final order and putting the finishing touches on them. But the sermon would not gel. And I finally realized why. Because I was sitting at home at my desk thinking theoretically about the value of service, while less than a mile and a half away, my own church people, whom I love and cherish, were working their little hearts out feeding our local community. I had justified not going over by saying to myself, well, they weren't expecting me anyway, and I have a sermon to write. But I was trying to write a sermon about service being our law and our prayer. You should have seen the look on the pastor's face at my little Mennonite church when I told her this story when I got there, because I put the sermon on hold and I went over to help. Now, by the time I got there, the actual meal service was winding down, but I was in plenty of time to help with cleanup. They had served well over 100 people. They used every scrap of turkey, but they didn't have to send anyone away hungry. And what really struck me was the warmth and the sense of connection that I could feel humming in that social hall. On every level, there was the obvious camaraderie among the people working in the kitchen, dishing out food and clearing tables and taking plates for people. Then I noticed that many of those helpers were not even members of our church. They were friends of the powerhouse of a woman who had decided this needed to happen, and she had gotten them to come along and help. So church people were connecting with each other. Church people were connecting with non-church people as they served together. All of us were connecting with our neighbors who had come to be served, who were connecting with each other as they ate together and their kids played together. So we know that service is good for us. We know that it's good for others. And we know that it builds community among us and between all kinds of people. And if we think of service as prayer, then we can bring together two things that I think Unitarian Universalists have an unfortunate tendency to keep separate, and that's community and spiritual practice. We are really good at community, right? I mean, we, most of us, I would venture to say, cite community as one of the primary reasons we come to church. We come for the community. We come to create community, and we come to serve the community. And increasingly, I find that Unitarian Universalists are also taking spiritual practice seriously. Many of us have things in our lives that we think of as spiritual disciplines. It might be traditional, like prayer, or meditation, or chanting. We might practice Tai Chi, or yoga, or some other form of movement. For some of us, artistic practices have become spiritual disciplines: writing, painting, working with clay. I have friends who are quilters and knitters and weavers who understand those things to be spiritual practices. But for the most part, we do these things as individuals, not with our larger religious community. Because our spiritual practices vary so widely, we generally don't expect to be engaged in a corporate spiritual practice where we do something all together as a body, the way so many religious traditions pray together, for example. Those of us who take spiritual growth and practice seriously often think of it as a solitary path, encouraged by our congregation, perhaps, but often not shared with our congregation. But if service is our prayer, then we do pray together. We pray together as we serve turkey dinners, or as we take part in the Martin Luther King Day of Service, or as we walk for peace, or as we fight against racism. Our shared service becomes a shared prayer. We serve and we pray as one body. Now, you've heard that expression, the family that prays together stays together. And I've always thought that was a little simplistic, because family dynamics are very complicated things and not everything can be solved by prayer. But I do think the bonds that form when people engage in a shared spiritual practice are very powerful bonds. So maybe the congregation that serves together stays together. When we put our hearts and our spirits into common work, the differences among us become much less important because we turn our focus to a greater good. Now, service is a really big topic, and I know you're exploring it all month. I've mostly been talking about the hands-on kind of service, providing food, helping with specific practical needs. But we also serve when we work for justice. And I want to take just a moment to talk about that. There's a parable that you may know already about a small village where the villagers have gathered by the river to have a picnic and share a beautiful afternoon. They're sharing food and conversation and having a lovely time, and then somebody notices a baby in the river, splashing and crying. And the baby is going to drown. So, of course, someone wades in and rescues the baby. And then they notice another baby coming down the river, and they pull that baby out. And soon, babies are coming downstream faster and faster. And the entire village is working together to rescue this flood of babies. They organize committees. They get a structure in place. They figure out how to be as efficient as possible to save these babies. And then a couple of people break away from the group and start walking upstream. Somebody says, "Where are you going? We need your help to save these babies." And they responded, "We're going upstream to stop whoever is throwing them in the water." When we serve others, we meet their immediate needs. Somebody has to pull those babies out of the water before they drown. When we work for social justice, we try to address the larger issues that created the needs in the first place. We go see why the babies are ending up in the river and figure out what we can do to stop that from happening. My little church served a meal to hungry people yesterday, and those people left the church full. But a lot of them are probably hungry again today, and we need to figure out what we can do about that. Just as people pray in many different ways, we serve in many different ways. And just as the prayers of others can bring us strength and comfort, so can the services that others provide. Sometimes we're comforted and encouraged when we receive service. Other times, we're inspired by service that we observe that reminds us to think about what we ought to be doing. And sometimes, we struggle to feel capable of serving. I chose that story about the leaky bucket to use with the children because I think sometimes we get stuck in thinking that we don't have enough. We're not good enough, we're not complete enough, we don't have our own act together well enough, whatever it might be, that we're not ready or able to serve others or do anything to make the world a better place. Until we feel that we can give from some place of complete abundance, You know, once I'm sure that I'm filled up, then I'm ready to give some of it away. When we feel depleted or inadequate, it's sometimes hard to be willing to serve or to feel as if we have anything to offer. Yesterday, I thought I didn't have the time or the energy to serve because I had a sermon to write. And I do believe that we need to be careful not to deplete ourselves, not to give until we're completely used up. I don't think that's a healthy model. But I also believe that the advice my mother used to give me when I was all caught up in my own unhappiness as a teenager was sound advice. Do something for someone else, she would say, you'll feel better. I expect some of you have heard that too, and perhaps said it to your own kids. If service is our prayer, we don't have to wait until we feel strong or generous or inspired before we serve. We can serve to help us feel stronger and more generous and more inspired. After all, a lot of times when people pray, they're not praying because they feel so spiritually complete and full. They pray out of a need for spiritual fullness and completion. If service is our prayer, sometimes we serve not because we feel like we have so much to give, but because we need to give to be reminded of what we have. At the turkey dinner last night, we had a basket available for people who wanted to make contributions, but the pastor greeted everyone at the door and assured them that the meal was free. And yet many people gave a small donation as they came in. "I'm in need," one woman said. "But everybody's in need," and she put $2 in the basket. So there's a story that gets told about a visitor who goes to a Quaker meeting for the first time. And after sitting in the silence for about 10 minutes and getting increasingly uncomfortable, he turned to the person next to him and said, "When does the service begin?" And the kind friend sitting next to him replied, "The service begins when the meeting ends." When our meeting this morning ends, you have the chance to explore what kind of service you might like to begin. There's a social justice fair today, and there will be representatives from many different groups in this church who will share information and invite you to get involved in the countless ways that USG is already working so hard to make a difference in this community. So I will leave you with the closing words of Peter Morales' essay. "We Unitarian Universalists have always been a faith that seeks to bring healing to a broken world. We heal the world and grow our souls when we join hands and take action. May service always be our prayer." May it be so.